Hi, this is Barry Listen, Informs, the Institute for Operations Research in the Management Sciences. You're listening to Science of Better, a series of podcasts about ways that analytics and math modeling help people like you and organizations like your own. Analytics has become a buzzword among large organizations today. Sometimes it's worth stopping a moment and asking where analytics and IT stand in an organization's plans. In today's segment, we talk to Thornton May. Thornton May is a polymath, serving as a columnist at Computer World, an IT futurist, and the dean of the IT Leadership Academy, to name a few of his credits. In 2009, he wrote the book, The New Null, Innovation Powered by Analytics. He'll be moderating a high-level panel about business and growing an analytics capability at the Informs Conference on Analytics and OR in Chicago this April. Thornton, welcome to the Science of Better.
It's great to be here. Great honor. I love your show, by the way. Thank you.
Thank you. Your academy has been conducting an interesting exercise with executives about the different time periods of information management. What have you been asking? What have you been hearing in response?
Well, it's interesting. Every quarter, I convene something called the Value Studio at Florida State College in Jacksonville, and it's an invitation only, if you will, like program for C-suite executives. And we've been doing this in May. We're going to be having Value Studio 23. So we've been doing this for about 6 years.
Uh-huh.
And have convened the top thinkers at this program for the last 6 years. One conclusion is obvious. And that is that management science, and let me be specific. I mean, I use an acronym to sort of make it. I come from the IT side of the value equation, so I'm obligated by my code of conduct to use an acronym. But it's FODDR, F-O-D-D-R, if you will, F-O-D-D-R-S, and FODDRs. And so what we're talking about is management science is forecasting, operations research, data mining, data integration, reporting, and statistics. Those things blended together, there is an unambiguous signal, and it is in that those things create huge value. Actually, it's risk-adjusted value and capital-adjusted value. So it's the best bang for your bucks. So that was observation number one. That was coming from the C-suite. Observation number two is that CXOs in general, but CIOs, chief financial officers, and chief marketing officers in particular, basically don't know the true value that management science can bring to the enterprise. They don't understand it. And so I'm actually a classically trained cultural anthropologist. So I've been studying, if you will, the cultural clashes between, if you will, the management science tribe, you know, the Informs folks,
right,
and the rest of the C-suite. And it's been fascinating.
The response that you received about information management struck me because it seems that people were focusing on some unusual things in terms of how information management has progressed from 1987 through where it will be 10 years from now.
Definitely. And the nice thing is that historically, it's interesting because on the enterprise side, we have migrated to a level of maturity where we're no longer device or technology fetishist.
Uh-huh.
Versus on the consumer side, you know, we all have we're jonesing for our iPads, we're jonesing for our iPhones, whereas in reality, what you really should be focusing on is the value of the technology. Ask not for an iPad. Rather, ask what knowledge can you use to create competitive differentiation for your enterprise.
And following up on that, I've heard other people, I guess people like Marco Schrage at MIT, agree with this finding that you need to focus on your goals when choosing technology and not fall in love with technology for tech's sake. Do you want to elaborate a little bit about that?
Well, that is way back. Ted Levitt, who was the marvelous editor at the Harvard Business Review, told us that, like, the essence of people really don't buy products. They buy the value the products they create, or the benefits the value create. So when we buy a drill, we're not really buying a drill. We're buying, if you will, a hole, the hole that the drill makes. And in the same way, you're not really buying, and this is where we get, this is an important, if you will, leap that we're going to have to make in the management sciences, is that people get caught up in the technologies and the methodologies and the what they perceive as being the complex math. No. Think about the business benefit, because what the people at Informs do create such value by unfortunately what we call the not the dark arts, but the tragically understood arts of information management and management science.
I thought I would return to the survey that you periodically do because you followed up on it and there were some pretty interesting insights from it. You hired independent analysts to go into depth about the way executives view the IT world and management. And you looked at something called the different seasons of innovation. Could you explain what you mean by that?
Well, we really do. One of the very important, if you will, executive survival skills in today's complex but exciting world is era awareness. And so really what is the zeitgeist of the time? And what we're finding is that every moment, every epoch, tends to have a very different feel to it. And there are behaviors. It's almost like, our evolutionary standard. And right now, we're migrating into what I'm calling the age of the new no, where actually ignorance is actually no longer tolerated in the enterprise. So very exciting. Very, very good news for basically the informs community.
A lesson that stood out in the report is innovation is not enough. So what should companies invest in when it comes to R&D and innovation, in your opinion?
Well, it's interesting. It's important that we get our terminologies straight because people frequently mistake invention and innovation as synonyms. And invention actually is basically the conversion of cash into an idea. Innovation is the reconversion of that idea into cash. And actually, management science, operations research in particular, can actually guide, if you will, that innovation process. Historically, we have misconceived innovation as basically ideation, just creating the ideas.
Uh-huh.
If you bring analytics to bear on your idea stream, you can actually, if you will, mine those ideas which have the most potential for creating the quickest, risk-adjusted, if you will, like a revenue stream or benefit stream if you're in a not-for-profit, or a public agency.
So once again, it's an idea of not innovation for innovation's sake, but keeping your eyes on a goal that you set for yourself.
Exactly. And Michael Schrag, who I know has dazzled the Inform audiences before, will argue that basically ideas are dangerous because they actually are distracting. It's ideas that make you money that we're trying to focus on.
Let's turn to your writings about analytics. In a column you wrote for SaaScom magazine after your book on analytics appeared, you pointed to four important lessons, and I'm going to state them. Number one, everyone knows they've got gobs of data to analyze. Number two, managers believe there's gold hidden in this data. Number three, these managers are frustrated that they can't get to their hidden treasure. And number four, nevertheless, there are organizations that are succeeding very well with advanced analytics. Can you elaborate?
I can't. I mean, one is the 61%, and this is the data comes from, basically, I'm on the road 250 days a year, talk to about, I actually manage a walled community of CXOs, for 1,500 people that we're constantly pinging and having interactions with on a weekly basis. And there's a general frustration among 61% of the organizations in that they know that there's data there. They know there are lots of needles in lots of haystacks. They're just not getting the value. But 23% are getting the value with regards to using analytics to really create and to win the game as it is currently structured. That's 23%. And basically, you've got 11%, if you will. No, actually, I think it is 11%, I think. But you've got those people who are actually using analytics to fundamentally change the basis of competition. And that is, there really is power. They say knowledge is power.
Right.
Knowledge is money. And that's it. And it's almost malfeasant in today's environment because we've got a perfect storm of opportunity. Because one is, we have actually put in place for the last decade of the last century, we're very, very good for us because we built out and totally, some might argue, over-invested in our what we call systems of records. These are the transaction processing systems, the OLTP systems that actually run the global economy. We are now transitioning after a 10-year walking tragically in the desert, basically. But now we are now transitioning to, as we move to 2011 and beyond, into this age of opportunity where we're now, we've got all this data and we have all this cheap computing power, which you can actually, you know, you can buy, like, for $3,000, you can basically buy, you know, like 1,000 computers for 30 minutes or something, or 10,000 computers for 30 minutes via the wonders of the cloud. So we can bring high-performance computing to analyze all the data we have. So it is the most exciting time.
And obviously it requires people capable of analyzing the data, and you wrote words of encouragement to managers thinking about using analytics and hiring people who can analyze the data. To condense one of your quotes, a new cadre of analytics leaders is about to emerge. These pioneers will have a little Columbus, a lot of Machiavelli, a little Caesar, and a lot of Alexander the Great. If you don't have someone like that at your organization, I suggest you start looking right now. So what do you mean by that? What qualities were you alluding to?
Well, the thing, these are the analytics who actually toil in, say, the Fortune 500 company. These are the unsung heroes of the new economy. I mean, they really, they're just amazing. I mean, the folks at Procter & Gamble, the folks at, you look at an amazing analytical competitor, which is an organization like UPS, or you look at Schneider Trucking, they actually, at the essence of their competitive advantage, is analytical differentiation. These people, because of the socialization process, I would say that there's sort of a stereotype that analytics, people who are analytical really are not great communicators.
Uh-huh.
And so we're actually seeing that more. It's very similar. The situation we find ourselves in now is very similar to the situation chief information officers found themselves in about 20 years ago. I mean, IT, information technology, was very, very powerful, but the people were perceived as geeks, if you will. And so, but then they had to make the transition from, if you will, great geek, or great practitioner of the technical arts to actually executive management. And I'm actually seeing that happen throughout the analytical community.
And your enthusiasm's obvious, and you've gone on to say that the analytics expert is a hero of our age. That's a pretty big declaration. What do you believe? Why do you believe that?
Well, empirical evidence. I talked to, in my walkabouts, if you will, around the Fortune 500 and the FTSE 100 and the CAC 40 and also in Asia, CEOs, the managing directors of large enterprises, are now asking, all right, what do we know? Do we know what we need to know to, one, basically continue to stay in this game, but also to win this game? And the great ones are asking to change this game. So they are people. Everybody now. There's almost a scavenger hunt among CEOs for great analytics. And so they're coming. They're coming to places. You'll actually see. I mean, I'm betting that at the Informs meeting, you're going to have some quiet executive search firms looking for the smart ones to try and cherry pick.
I suspect you're right. Final question. As we mentioned earlier, you'll be moderating a panel for Informs on April 11th about growing an analytics capability at a company. How will you approach this question with your guest panelists?
Well, the way I've actually learned from the analytical community is that I will let the data tell the story.
Uh-huh.
And what we have is we have amazing organizations and amazing thought leaders on that panel. And what they're going to do is they're going to say, like, all right, this is where we started. You know, and you actually see these evolve over time. The great thing is about good analytics is it's addictive. Forgive me for the vegans in your audience, but it's sort of, describing analytics to people who really haven't seen it yet is kind of like describing barbecue to people in an age where fire hasn't been invented yet. You know, so it's not there. So what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to let them tell their story. And the stories are so compelling, and that's what's so wonderful about Informs. I mean, it's almost malfeasant for people not to come to Informs. And I know it is a plug, but it's a very heartfelt plug because I went, you know, I did not know Informs existed. But the smartest people in the world come in, and they talk about solving these amazing problems and creating amazing competitive advantage. And so, like, if you don't expose yourself to that kind of thinking, you're going to be operating at a significant disadvantage vis-a-vis your competitors.
That's all the time we have today. We've been talking to Thornton May, moderator of a panel at the Informs Analytics Conference in Chicago, and author of The New No, Innovation Powered by Analytics. Thornton, thank you for joining us.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
And thank you for listening to the Science at Better podcast by Informs, the Institute for Operations Research in the Management Sciences. For more about operations research and the series of podcasts, visit us on the web at www.informs.org. Good day, and remember, keep on punching those numbers.